Off the ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.
So I'm delighted to say we're joined in studio by David Moran. We were just chatting here just before we hit record, and the Mikko documentary was one that you watched as well. And it was great.
Yeah, it was really enjoyable. I probably had a bit of a vested interest in it. Yeah. Anyway, but it was fantastic, an amazing man.
Mm. Should be on the syllabus down in Kerry.
Yeah. It should be a 14-part series.
When I was watching it, I was thinking, we're only, because I'm from Kildare.
Yeah.
So, Kildare gets, 5-6 minutes of the thing, understandably, because it has to move on. But, you could make a 3-part documentary about Mikko and Kildare alone. So.
Yeah. No, it was amazing. And his personality really shone through. And then when you factor in what he achieved as a player and then as a manager, it's an amazing story. And just shows the guy his love for the game. And, obviously his methods were timeless.
Yeah. Would you have grown up, would he have been a guy that you would have bumped into with your dad around the place, or would you have seen him rarely enough?
Not really early on, because I was Tralee, he was Waterville, or he was probably two. He was in Laois probably, or Kildare, or whatever. But I came across him more in the last 10 years than I did in the 20 years before that. But it was always a real privilege meeting him. And before I ever met him, I was always looking at him in a very positive light, just because my father had a very good relationship with him. So before I met him, I liked him. If that makes sense. But
the country feels like that.
Yeah. You almost feel like you know him anyway. I know. Even before, if you never met him.
There were shots of your dad looking ripped.
Yeah, it was bad.
Looking great. And actually, I thought looking very fit in a very modern way. He wasn't weighed down with weights. You know, the Armagh boys, kind of thing in the early 2000s. He looked lean and muscular as well. Phenomenal shape.
Yeah. And I suppose he would have trained very hard, from judging what he told me anyway. But he wouldn't, that team, I think Pat Spillan, he told me, was really the only one that was started to bring weights in. He was a PE teacher, so he was kind of, I suppose, the cutting edge of where it was. But the rest of them was mainly they used to push-ups morning, noon and night, and sit-ups. And obviously they ran a lot as well under Mikko, so it was good recipe. Yeah, they were. So they're in good shape, especially.
Would you still do push-ups? Are push-ups still a thing in 2018?
People are different. Some people do. I get through phases of it, and then if it's part of a weights program, obviously you do it, or you might substitute it. I think it's more if it's part of your program. Sometimes you might feel, all right, I need to do a bit of conditioning here. I might need to up my upper body a bit, but I don't want to do extra gym sessions.
Yeah.
Do I do this at night and stuff? I think it depends on where your head's at, or where you feel, or you need to bulk up, or what. Sometimes the weights program that you're doing is enough. I think it's a personal thing.
Yeah.
I was never a big push-up man.
Right.
But just time.
Where's the balance now as a GAA player? It's a very topical conversation. Always at this time of year, it seems to crop up, the demands on players. Joe Sheridan did that interview on LMFM where he said a lot of players detest the lifestyle. And that may be true, actually, of a lot of the teams who aren't really competing at the business end. It's probably tough being a Meath footballer. How are you finding it? How much of a commitment is it in your life? Do you feel it's gone overboard? Is it where you want it to be? Give us your thoughts.
It's a huge commitment. It's certainly not a hobby. It's a complete and utter lifestyle. But I think the fact that you can pull the plug and get out anytime you want kind of makes it easy. It's, you're doing it. I think the rewards of it, in the sense that if you go all the way and you play in front of 80,000 people a couple of times in the latter stages and you win Ireland, something that great is going to take a monumental sacrifice. You won't achieve that without anything else.
Wouldn't mean much if you didn't have to train very hard for it, would it?
No. And I remember reading something from Declan Sullivan. I think he put it very well. It was the whole GAA year is or even your career is a journey. It's not just this is your highlight, this is your lowlight. It's kind of sacrifices that a group of people make together, knowing that everyone else is making the same sacrifices, and you're giving up, the pain you're going through in terms of physical, emotional roller coasters. Sometimes there's a siege mentality. Sometimes, you might be playing well and you're getting a lot of heat, and inside that what you're doing is good. And then all of a sudden that accumulates and you achieve something, and that feeling of satisfaction, is driven by the amount of sacrifice and everything. I do accept that some people, if you're not there at latter stages and you're giving up so much, it's such, your 20s and your early 30s, which are such a big part of your life.
Yes.
But it is a choice that you make, and I don't think it's something you can have to. You're either all in or or you're not. You know, I think it's a very personal thing. You know, I think.
Have you ever thought to yourself, "I'm not sure if it's worth it quite now"? I mean, I know you had your injury years, like some very bad injury years with cruciates and your retina. But even in a healthy year, has it ever occurred to you?
Yeah. Has been loads of times, but like really? After a bad game, is it worth it? You know what I mean? Loads of times up and down during the year, but not like
so
never.
That's quite an emotional
stage. Yeah, but kind of reaction. I don't think
on a
really.
Tuesday morning in work.
Yeah, I think the fact that I was injured for so long and I was like, I really want to get back here. This is, you know, I was in so young that I took it for granted, but I just presumed it was going to happen forever. Like, and then I didn't realize the amount of stuff that you can control. You know, like I plan on playing for the next 3 or 4 years or 5 years or 10 years, and then all of a sudden you're gone. You've no choice. I don't think that happened to me really, just maybe because I got injured.
You got the glimpse of what it's like.
Yeah, I suppose when I was out, I knew this is not where I want to be. I want to be in for as long as I can.
Because you broke in at 20, which is needless to say very young, not least in Kerry, and there's early success, like you're on the senior panel for 2009 for that All-Ireland win. And then you get that period 2010 to 2013 where you don't make a single championship appearance for Kerry, two cruciate injuries and then half the retina inside your right eye.
Yeah,
That's horrific stuff. Like I've never spoken to you about that before. Was your career close to ending for big swathes of that period?
Yeah, absolutely. I like, even from a professional point of view, I'm quite ambitious and professionally. Like, you know, I wasn't one of these players that often they can park their career until their football finishes. So I was doing a master's in finance at the time, and I kind of said, look, my football career is over after the second cruciate. I just said, look, I might just try and, you know, look at the New York option, look at the London option, you know, whether this was going to be a thing. So it was definitely something I considered, but it wasn't something that I wanted to happen.
Yeah.
It was more that I thought, okay, like, how am I going to come back from this? You know,
the same knee, wasn't it?
Yeah. And I said, like, is there anything I was obviously after the second time I was like, is there anything I could have done to prevent it? Like, and Ray Moran was even saying, look, if it went the first time, it can go the second time, and there's no guarantees again, you know. So I said I was going to give it one more lash to get back at it.
Yeah.
But it definitely crossed my mind that I might have been forced early, you know. And
How did it go the second time? Where did that happen?
We were playing Armagh in a league game. I think it was in March, and it was the last game I was meant to miss. I was going to be on the panel for the following game. Right. So we were training on a Thursday night with Kerry, but it was going to be a light session. So they said, look, go down and train with your club on the Friday instead, because it'll be a good session and you'll be back in the squad then for the following week. And I just did it in the training then. So it was one of those things.
And you probably knew, having done it the first time, that you had done it again.
Yeah,
I felt familiar.
Yeah, I was afraid. And then I had done a load of work the first time. So I went out and my leg was very strong. So when they did a test, I passed the test, even though it didn't feel right. So they said, look, okay, there's no point in scanning. Oh, it's just a jolt. You just take 2 weeks out. And so I went back into the gym. I tried to train the following Tuesday and I collapsed twice and like going for a ball or whatever. And I just said, I need to get this scanned. Like, and then it was still kind of the test was okay, but I went up to Ray Moran, and I suppose a guy who's looking at knees morning, noon, night, he literally just put his hand on my leg, and my knee just released, and he just said, "Yeah, you're gone."
He knew the pressure point.
Yeah, so
that's sickening.
Very much so. Yeah.
Are you the type that'll break down in tears in Ray Moran's office?
Oh, definitely did. Yeah,
did
you? Very hard not to.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think it's only natural to show so much you care.
Yeah. And what does he say? Get over it.
No, but in fairness to him, he's good. Like, he doesn't, you know, dress it up. Like, he just said, look, this is the fact, I'm sorry, but you know, this is it.
Yeah,
you know, we'll get going as quick as we can. Like, you know,
you bounce back really well. Like, you think of 2014, that famous semi-final against Mayo, where you get 47 possessions, which is twice any Mayo player, and you know, you look to be in a good place. I did see Eamon Fitzmaurice saying you're going to be sitting out a good bit of the league.
Yeah, just a few niggles and stuff that I'm trying to clear up.
Right.
But I hope to get back for a lot of stage of the league. I think it's probably just a few years and wear and tear, and just trying to, you know, I think last year I played the McGrath Cup last year, you know, so it's not a case of where you get a certain age, you just get put off for a while. But no, I just have a few things I need to tidy up. But I'm hoping to look forward to it. I think once the 1st of January, everyone wants to get back in the field, especially trying to keep fellas away more than anything.
Right. Well,
Christmas is a great idea to stay out, like, but once you get back in, everyone's just getting into it and you want to be with it.
When did you become one of the old guys in the team? How has this happened?
I don't know. I keep
thinking you as a young guy, but you're 29 now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There's probably young lads you're seeing and you don't like the fact they're born in years you can remember very well.
We were at a training camp last year and it was myself and Kieran Donaghy and Jason Foley. He was one of the young guys in, like, and we were watching and there was a documentary on Princess Diana and we were saying he was looking at it, had never heard of this person before, and we were looking at him saying, "How do you mean?" Yeah. So
well, like, he must have heard of her.
Yeah, but he just kind of said, "This is an unbelievable story." Like, he was
he's looking at the crowds. Going, this is huge.
Yeah.
Diana one's a scary one, actually.
Yeah. And then you had a situation where a few of the lads weren't around for the 97 final. Like, that was another...
Because I guess if you're 20, you're 21 now.
Yeah.
So you're not even that young.
Yeah.
Like, you're now going to be playing with lads born only in the 21st century.
Yeah,
like very soon.
Yeah, so I'm trying to hope, like, Kieran and Dunnigan and a few more stay on just to keep me going. Yeah.
And have you changed around the dressing room? Because you think of the likes of Declan O'Sullivan, like, proper, solid, steely character, Galvin, the Gooch, the O'Shea's. Tough customers, great crack, took no nonsense, just like the perfect kind
of characters. Yeah, we'll have to mix it.
Characters. All rounders. Like, that's a big environment for you to go into. You're now stepping into their shoes, in a sense. Are you finding yourself changing in how you're behaving in the dressing room with youngsters, with a guy who's 18, 19, 20? Do you find yourself sitting down for little chats in the corner, or how do you treat something like that?
I don't really make a conscious decision. I do whatever comes naturally. I mean, there's no point in me trying to be Declan Sullivan because I'll never be able to do that. You know, I'm just trying to be me, and if that comes naturally, it does. If some of the guys probably around in the middle, some of the younger guys, if they ask me something, of course I'll sit down. I'd meet anyone anytime. But I suppose naturally you're probably, maybe I wouldn't say mentoring, but you're probably speaking to people differently than you would be 5 or 6 years ago. You wouldn't be asking for advice as much as you'd be lending it on. But yeah, for me personally, I don't try and be anyone else. You know, if I feel I need to say something, I'll say it. If someone's looking for my opinion on something, I'll give it. But you know, I won't be forcing it down people's throat.
I saw you did a piece in the Irish Examiner a couple of years ago, one of these Q&A things, and there were some very interesting answers. What traits do you least like in others? I find people with no self-awareness very frustrating, particularly when they don't consider the point of view of others. It's very enlightened. I agree with that. I like that. What trait do you least like about yourself? I often overthink things.
Yeah.
Generally, people who overthink things are terrible interviewees. Don't like saying too much. They'll ruminate on it afterwards. And I shouldn't have said this. I shouldn't have said that. So you think you overthink things?
Maybe, yeah. I often get that, like that. You're thinking too much about this, or am I overanalyzing it to death? Like, you know, but I don't know. That's something I was always trying to work on, just to maybe don't overthink it. Like, that I was definitely, I don't know, maybe does that go down to, say, if it's a football thing, do you care so much that you're trying to make sure you do everything to get it right?
And would that run through all aspects of your life, not just football, but just a bit of everything?
Yeah, I suppose in work, I'd analyse, well, that would be some of my job too, like to analyse things, or a company or whatever. I need to make sure I don't miss anything.
So you have an analytical wired mind.
It's probably not the worst thing, but in a football sense, sometimes it can be a hindrance.
Yeah. Your dream dinner party was LeBron James, Warren Buffett, and Tommy Tiernan.
Yeah.
I mean, if we get some cameras on that.
I'm a big LeBron fan.
Yeah. Warren Buffett, I was more interested in. What would you talk to Warren Buffett about?
I suppose he's hugely successful. I read his book and it was brilliant and off the wall at the same time. Like, he's very kind of...
Recommend it.
I would, it's long, it's a good read, like, you want to be into it. But he was slightly recluse, like, you know, if social skills wouldn't have been huge, and then he went on to build such a huge empire. And there was little things that I just thought were good, but you know, I just thought it was a very interesting space where, you know, you just assume all the hedge funds are making huge money, but a lot of them fail, and he was able to constantly beat the market, you know.
What's the gist of his secret? The most cliched question you can ask of Warren Buffett.
Yeah, you'll have to read the book. I don't really know. I kind of forget now what his body hung on to the most. Off the top of my head, I'll have to bring him to dinner.
All right, okay.
But I just thought that the whole story and the way he did it would have been so much different to my head, because I'd probably be more extrovert as a person.
Yeah.
People skills wouldn't have been high on the agenda, but I wouldn't be his strongest. But I just like, he was very driven.
Yeah.
And his ability to calculate numbers and to pull apart a company, it was just, you're reading it and you're like, how did someone do that?
Right.
You know, it's like, okay, a computer mind. I presume that, look, that's probably answering your question. Yeah, his ability to read numbers and pull apart what is important or what's potentially, you know, lucrative.
He lives a pretty frugal, relatively speaking.
Yeah, I think he said he's got one indefensible, and that's the private jet. He said that's what he calls it, the indefensible. But yeah. Other than that, yeah, he's the second wealthiest man in the world, just passed out.
Is he? Who's number?
Bill Gates.
Number one. Right. Because you did your thesis on hedge funds.
Yeah, diversification. Whether you could diversify a portfolio of shares using an investment in hedge funds.
Okay.
Or whether there was contagion. All simple stuff.
What's the short answer?
You can.
Yeah, right, okay.
Yeah. But it is still contagious.
So is this really, this stuff would float your boat? Like you'd read all financial books, you really enjoyed your work life?
I do. Work is a big thing for me.
Whether it's
a tune out from football, but I was never one to part a career until I was finished. I was always very driven.
Yeah.
But it's more the business side of it than the markets more now. Like I do kind of like work on corporate finance and due diligence and more kind of business reviews and raising finance. That's kind of more what I like. Mm. It's more the business side of it, of maybe the market side, where Warren Buffett was pulling apart a company to see could he make money out of it. I like that side of it.
Yeah.
To see if he could do that.
And you're down in Tralee now. You're working down there.
Yeah. So I was in EY for 4 years in Cork, which I really enjoyed. I got great training down there. And then I had an opportunity to join a firm, Casey Stevenson in Tralee. And I'm there about 18 months. And, you know, things are going well. We're growing and, you know, we're trying to get in more of that transactions work. And obviously you're doing more of the vanilla accounting as well. So, yeah, things are going well. But in that regard, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's great that you have something like that going on, because a lot of guys, as you said, it's their whole life revolves around GAA. And you do...
Maybe you're better off from a football point of view to do that. I don't know. Yeah, but everyone's different. Everyone's wired differently. Like,
when you retire at 35 and you realise I've neglected most aspects or a lot of aspects of my professional life, I think it's a scary thing for lads.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think at that point it's where the was it worth the conversation becomes very serious. I think somebody like you who's training a lot and maybe can't go out for drinks as much as you would otherwise, or sacrifice certain things like your golf, in the grand scheme of things, that's not serious. I think it's when lads chuck the career a little bit to play.
Yeah, especially if you've family or something where you have serious responsibilities and you're finished and you're left, okay, what do I do now? Do you know? But
everyone has to make their choices.
Yeah, everyone, you know, and sometimes, you know, if you become a really successful footballer and you put everything in, you know, you'll get a bounce back from that as well. You know, people will give you goodwill and you'll get opportunities out of that.
We had your father in here doing an interview.
Yeah.
I listened to it.
Yeah.
It was lovely. The one thing he said to me beforehand, just maybe don't ask me about David. I've had my time. This is his time. I don't want to be commenting on him. I thought, and absolutely, we left you alone. But I thought a very wise thing, a very fair thing. That generation hanging over you is probably, you know, you've had your own success, so it's not quite the same as, you know, maybe the Liverpool generation of the 80s hanging around. But your father commenting on you, would he give you much advice?
Yeah, he privately? Was always very like that. He was always real supportive. Like, there was never a kind of, oh, geez, I hope he's not better than me. Do you know, there was never that kind of thing. He was always really supportive of us. We were lucky in one sense, myself and Brian, I would have been living in my brother's shadow more than dad probably growing up, because he was very talented from a young age.
Right.
And I was always Brian's brother, as opposed to, well, from people my own age or people in my own age. But we, like, in our club, you had the Walshes, the Mourns, and Owen Liston. So, like, on the same team, you had, say, whether you were Shawnee's son, Barmer's son, dad's son, it made no difference. Like, so there was no such thing as a kind of an isolated thing. We were all in it together. So we were probably, number one, we didn't know any different. And number two, then, the three families felt the same.
It's different.
You know?
It's different if you're from a village where you're Augie's son and there's no one else.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we didn't have that. We were all in the same club,
right.
You know, and at the mind the same.
So you're not
area.
Such a novelty.
Yeah, absolutely.
And would he watch in the car home, even now or early on in your career? Would he give you a few little bits, or would he generally?
He'd say, but he would never have kind of like if you played bad, like, well, we'd have always taken, like, if we played bad, we'd have been unbearable anyway. Like, it wasn't as if we were going around thinking that we did well, but he'd never put the boot in. Like, if you asked him, obviously he'd tell you, no, you didn't play well or whatever, but he'd never kind of force on you, you need to shape up here. Like, you know, he'd never have been like that. But I suppose as a product of that, then when we did want advice, we went to him so easily because we weren't getting it at, you know, ran down your throat when it didn't happen. And but like, in fairness to him, he was always fair. He always, like, if he thought you played well, he'd tell you. Like, he wasn't going to say you played, he wasn't going to try and keep your feet in the ground the whole time. Okay. You know,
so he was allowed, yeah, but, allowed you a bit of ego.
Yeah, but he never pushed us, like, he always encouraged us, but he never pushed us as in, like, you need to go train and you need to do this. You know, it was all just, you know, we were mad for it anyway. You know, we were really interested, really keen, so he probably didn't need it. If we did, maybe he might have pushed us a bit harder. But
a final point or two then. So the Mayo replay, Kerry 17 points, Mayo 216, which is a 5-point win in the end. And it felt like more watching. I don't know what it felt like on the pitch. Not to put too fine a point on it, where are Kerry short? Because your ambitions are clearly huge. So where does this team need to go? What did you make of that game? Did you watch it back?
Well, I haven't watched it back, maybe bits of it, but
will you?
I didn't want to ruin Christmas. Yeah. No, I will. I'll watch it back, right? Yeah. But it'll probably be before we play Mayo again or something like that. You know, I wasn't gonna analyse it in the middle of the off season when there was nothing coming up to write it.
Would it have ruined your mood?
Oh, it was, yeah. I mean, going back to, you put so much into it and then to fall short. I mean, like we said earlier in the year, like, our year was never going to be judged on the league final.
Yeah.
Irrespective of who we beat or who we didn't beat or whether we won it or lost it. It was always going to come down to the end of the year. And I suppose that's the bad thing at times, like, you decide at the end of the year whether it was a good year or a bad year. Mm. You know, as opposed to see if you were enjoying it all the way through. But, yeah, look, at the reality of life is that we were off the pace last year and the year before. You know, I suppose we've been, like, I mean, we would have been struggling to say we'd be, like, Dublin have been the best team in the country easily over the last 5 or 6 years.
Easily.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, and Mayo have been the last two finals, you know, so they're, you know, most likely they're second, and we're behind that, and we have to rebuild, really. I think, in terms of talent, I think we're right up there. I think probably, like, a most disappointing thing is that our performance against Cork was far better than our performance against Mayo. Mm. You know, we played very well in the Munster final.
And you know, wide until about the
40, yeah, you know, lads were very clinical, yeah. You know, then to our graph kind of didn't go up. It probably went, Galway game was okay, and so, but then, you know, our graph certainly didn't go up from there, and that was disappointing.
That's surprising, isn't
it? Yeah,
you would think it would.
And historically, that wouldn't be the case. Historically, it would improve, especially when I came into this panel first, the 08s, 9s. You know, once we hit Dublin, our graph seemed to go up, but it didn't. And
is that work rate in training, in matches, in both, the general atmosphere of?
It's hard to put your finger. It's a hard question. Like, how do you get the most optimum performance? The data fair. You know, that's what we're doing. But, you know, at the end of the day, there's only so much you can control. You make sure you're giving yourself every chance in terms of our rebuilding or training. You know, there's a great buzz back again. People are mad for Road, and you know, there's no promises, there's no guarantees with this thing. Like, we could come up short again this year. Hopefully, it won't happen. But all you can do is give yourself every chance, and you know, put your shoulder to the wheel, do everything we can do, and, you know, live the life as we've alluded to earlier. And, you know, from there, you know, you just have to hope for the best.
Yeah. A final point then, I asked you before we started, I know you were talking to the written press, and was anything jumping up, any big issue? Because it doesn't seem like there's a real big issue at the moment, and you said Clifford. David Clifford. So anyone, I mean, I think the whole country has seen bits of him, certainly in the minor games which have been on TV, and he looks special. When did you first come across Clifford or hear about him?
I probably in the Hogan Cup final. I watched that on TV, I'd say 2 years ago. He got 2-5 or something. Yeah, he's a very special player, but I was just alluding to earlier, like, he needs a chance. Do you know what I mean? The expectation on him at the moment is just phenomenal. Like, it's very unfair on him.
It's very tough, yeah.
Yeah, like, I was saying, like, Tommy Walsh was, you know, the best fella I'd seen to come into the Kerry squad at that age, and he didn't get a run his first year out of minor, but then the second year and third year, he really went into his own. But, like, even Declan Sullivan, I think in 2002 he was out of minor, he didn't, you know, play, but then from there on in. So, you know, although he's very special, and, you know, we're really looking forward to, you know, I just hope, you know, people just give him a chance. He needs patience. Like, I remember, like, even when the only other minor I've seen like that was Joe Kenning. Like, when he came out of minors, there was huge thing, and then he took the year out, and people were almost offended. Like, you know, it was like, what, you know.
And is it too tough now? Because remember Gooch? Like, you think
Gooch did it. Ronan Clark was another one who seemed to have out of minor.
Like, you think of Gooch? He looked like a child out there at times, but it was just so gifted he could do it. Like physically, Clifford looks a bit bigger than Gooch, but maybe the game has moved on physically. Like, is it possible now really for someone of Clifford's age to jump straight in, to go from minor in, or can you tell yet?
I'm not sure it's moved on that much since 2002. Yeah, I mean, okay. Them boys, the Armagh boys, were serious, you know, but I haven't seen another Gooch since I played, you know, so and to compare him to Gooch now at this level is very unfair, you know.
Yeah.
And I think one of the lads is saying to me, like, if Donny was playing full forward in the minor team, you know, the last day against Derry, or if Paul Gainey was full forward for the minors that day, like, how would he, you know, it's just, you know, he's very special, but I just think we need to give him a chance, like, you
this
know.
It's not the modern world. Instant gratification. Is he going to win an All Ireland this year and an All Star Footballer of the Year? Is he in training with you guys now?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, and in fairness to my, he's put the head down. He's working very hard, from, you know, and you know, which is a great sign. You know,
yeah,
and I wouldn't expect
that.
You know, I wouldn't expect anything else. He's come in with a great reputation of having a great work rate. He's, you know, having a great leader. But you know, I hope it does happen for him. But if he doesn't, I won't be losing. I won't be writing him off.
No, we'll give him a few years yet. Listen, pleasure having you in. Yeah. 2018, I mean, the Football Championship is going to be a whole load of different this year.
Yeah,
are you? More games, better games. Like, I think it suits Kerry more than a lot of teams. You don't?
I don't know. I think before you're playing 8 games in 11 weeks in the league, and then you're playing 5 games in 5 months.
Yeah.
Like, I don't, that doesn't suit anyone. Like,
no, but I think, like he beat Cork and beat them well, but you're still turning up to Croke Park. Going up against a Mayo team who've had that odyssey, I think you're at a disadvantage going into those games where you haven't road tested.
But like things. Mayo would have had that today, 5 in a row or something in Connacht for a while, and like Donegal and Tyrone and Monaghan, they would have dominated. You know, well, Ulster is different because but Dublin is a huge example. I mean, if Dublin hadn't won, you'd be saying it's a huge advantage for Dublin.
Correct.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's great for the teams to be play more games at the latter stage of the year. Like, I was laughed at side train. I was saying, I'd love if the league and the championship were on the same time. Do you like the Champions League and the Premiership, and you're playing Donegal and Killarney in August, 2 weeks before a championship game, you know, when you have your full team and everyone's champion at the bit. But at least this is a sum, because I was injured in 2012 when Kerry played Tyrone in the championship, and it was probably one of the hardest games I ever sat through. The atmosphere was incredible. Just,
I know. You're going to get some great summer nights down in Killarney this year.
Yeah, and if I think of Castlebar, I just think of wind and rain, and, you know, because we always play them in the league.
Yeah,
whether
you
watch them in the Connacht Championship and it's, you know, the sun is shining up there, it's like a different, you know, and it'll be great coming up to different venues, even going up to Ulster, you know, in the top of the ground and, you know,
provincial grounds. I'd say that Limerick semi-final against Mayo is one of
similar
your favourite memories.
That. Yeah, but like, because we won is always going to be one of my favourite wins. But like, and that kind of, that like, 50,000 people down on top of the field, with something at stake, you know, and, you know, so I'm very excited by it. I think it's a great move.
Enjoy it, and we'll see you when we see you. Thanks.
Yeah, perfect.
Off the Ball on News Talk. Thanks to Air. Catch all the sports you love free on the Air Sport Pack with Air Broadband.